Welcome, everyone, to episode 26 of Security Nation. I'm Kyle Flaherty. Today is the WannaCry podcast. Josh Feinblum, Vice President of Information Security at Rapid7, joined me, actually. And we just did a quick one, really just talking about what's been going on, what we're seeing potentially that might happen, as well as just discussing a little bit about the piling on around patching and what to do in ransomware cases and stuff like that. Obviously, we'll be contributing more information about this as all of this kind of happens. And actually, Josh and I talk about that and potentially coming back in as all the research comes in, the forensics comes in, as we figure out what kind of happened. But please enjoy episode 26 of Security Nation.
You're listening to Security Nation with host Kyle Flaherty.
You did chew, but I tried to. We don't have any Indian food today, which for those who are familiar with the Security Nation podcast, the thousands out there, Josh Feinblum is in my office. We're recording a special edition, no surprise, a WannaCry edition, but no Indian food.
Which made me want to cry.
Right. Horrible. Ransomware? I stole that from Jen Ellis, so if she actually listens to the podcast, we have to give her credit. On that stuff. Okay, so there's a ton of noise out there right now about WannaCrypt, WannaCry, whatever you want to call it. But let's just back up a little bit, because you've been talking about it amongst a lot of our researchers and a lot of people out there overall. Let's just back up and just explain what it is overall and kind of separate the noise a little bit.
Yeah, I think WannaCry is really just a new variant of ransomware, which some people are calling ransomworm. It's not just, you know, the typical malware where a human has to click on something and now that machine's infected. What we saw is after that initial infection, it essentially is able to exploit a vulnerability in Microsoft Windows that allows it to self-propagate through the facilities or environments it finds itself in without human interaction. Mm-hmm. And that's really why we saw it spread so quickly and have such an operational impact.
Right. And that, of course, is the Eternal Blue vuln that was in March or April?
It was patched in March. And right. It was leaked in April.
Right. So they're using all that. It, you know, really on Friday we heard about this through the National Health Services in the UK, and then quickly, obviously, it spread. A lot of big names, big governments, all that kind of stuff. All that information is out there. We've been talking about it. A bunch of people have. The thing that I actually find more interesting, at least for this podcast, an immediate kind of like the I shouldn't say immediate, a lot of people like rushing to blame people for not patching, rushing, like, and it annoys me, having been in this industry for so long, you've been in this industry for so long, that's really not the point here. Like, now's the time to like talk about this stuff in a better way.
Well, I think that this event really does raise the flag around why is it so hard for us to patch, right? You know, I don't think that you can necessarily place blame on people for not patching. Mm-hmm. I'm sure there are some scenarios where actually somebody deserves to be blamed for it.
Sure.
But at scale...
And we'll have them on the podcast next week.
Right. but at scale, this is really an issue that, you know, still decades into the modern technology world, right, plagues us.
Yep.
And, you know, whether it is a medical device that's been running Windows XP for, you know, 15 years, or it is, you know, an employee's laptop who refuses to restart their machine, right? It's hard to say, you know, for each asset that's impacted what the cause is, but it is fascinating that we're still seeing worms be as explosive as they are today, using exploits that were patched months prior.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the thing that I guess annoys me is it's less about the people who are supposed to get the patching done and more about, are we making it as easy as possible to actually do that stuff? Are we working within the systems that they already have for remediation? It's obviously something we deal with all the time with our customers, and we're pushing to make that easier for them. But I do think it's on us a little bit to make this just easier moving forward.
It is. It's on all of the vendors really should be coming together and figuring out how to make patching at scale just happen.
Right.
Right. It just needs to happen, and it's not happening.
Yeah.
you know, there will certainly be environments that are sensitive where a patch could break a medical device or something like that. That will just pose challenges for the near and midterm future.
Yeah.
Hopefully we can figure out something in the longer term. But absolutely. I mean, there is just a very weird dynamic where, you know, a system can be connected to the internet and vulnerable for 2 months to a critical vulnerability and just not fix itself.
Right. Well, and I think it exposes to something that I think you and I talked about the last time we talked, and I certainly talk about all the time, and as do you, but the, not rift, that's the wrong word, maybe divide is the right word, between security and IT. And the fact that, yeah, security found all the vulns, IT's responsible for patching it. How they're playing together, I think this exposes that ability to make sure that they're playing together.
You know, I had a teacher who used to always remark that as soon as you have two people, you have politics, right? And so, you know, we will always be in an environment where the where those politics exist. Some IT teams are going to work better than others with their IT counterparts. Some IT teams will report into their IT counterparts. I think that it goes back to what we were just talking about, is this shouldn't be a political problem. This should just be a, hey, if you are a Microsoft Windows customer, when we release these patches, and I'm just picking on Microsoft as an example, like, don't worry, it's going to patch itself, right? And it's not going to be a major impact to the user.
Right.
Now, I mean, I'm trivializing how complex it probably is to solve that, but it is like that we have to remove politics from the equation as vendors, or it's always going to be a losing battle.
Yeah, and the more we can put workflow and automation into that, that part at least, I think, is better. So, all right, we're around 1 o'clock Eastern on Monday. People came, you know, started coming back to work. We obviously heard some things, especially in the APAC regions, as they came back online overall. But where is this headed in your estimation, or what are we seeing?
So, I mean, we will just continue to see this taper off. It's certainly going to impact some people, some environments, some institutions perpetually for a long time. Mm-hmm. But I would just suspect it to be kind of a lingering decline, so to speak. Now, I think what will be more interesting to watch is, as future remote code exploit vulnerabilities present themselves, if we start to see ransomware attached to all of those.
Mm.
Because, you know, what will cause a lot of problems is every time there is an RCE, if it starts to operate at scale in the form of ransomware, because it you know, ransomware, when it hits one machine, is a nuisance most of the time. When it hits 100 machines or 1,000 machines or more, it becomes an operational problem, a major one.
Yeah.
And so, seeing if this becomes a more common thing will be very interesting to see.
Was there, in your opinion, I have an opinion, but starting with healthcare, that's a strategic decision.
Well, I think there's a lot that we don't really know yet. We don't know if this was the very first variant of this. I think there's actually a lot of reports that that what we saw Friday morning in the UK was really the second variant of this. So we don't know if there was a specific organization targeted and then somehow something broke, which caused it to spread. And we may have seen that in the past.
It got out of control even for them.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, that's really how Stuxnet was discovered.
Sure.
And so we also know that Telefonica was impacted very, very quickly in succession with the NHS. So, I mean, healthcare is generally one of the frequent targets of ransomware.
Mm-hmm.
But Telefonica was, you know, I don't have the timeline, but I suspect very shortly thereafter, if not simultaneously, impacted. And to their credit, the Spanish CERT did a phenomenal job starting to mount a response to this. And so, you know, I don't know if it's healthcare in general, if it was a mistake in the deployment of this particular variant of the malware. It'll be interesting to see what we discover in the next few months.
Yeah, and it's funny when you look at this time, obviously everything happened really quickly, and then all of a sudden you have this 22-year-old chap who creates a kill switch, you know, kind of by mistake, potentially, but becomes a,
you know,
at least in our industry, I don't know if Rockstar's the...
He probably got a lot of Twitter followers.
I bet he did. He needs to handle all of those followers.
So, you know, I think it's interesting. When you look at science in general, so many of our discoveries are just happenstance, right? So this was a guy who decided he was going to go tinker and saw something in source code and said, what happens if? And what's interesting is it wasn't just a kill switch. He was able to actually start to get a feel of all of the hosts that were reporting
in.
And so it was a great deal of intelligence for us to understand kind of the impacted regions, right? It allowed us to pretty quickly determine that during that time period, you saw a very significant impact in China and Russia, a relatively small impact in the United States, and even across Europe when you compare the first two. So it was actually a really good source of intelligence.
Yeah. And then any, like, I know the first part of this answer, of course, is we're still looking into all of this stuff. As much as we want to move as fast as all of this does, I think it's important that we take our time to do the research. And we have some, fortunately, really smart people that we get to work with every day who do a lot of that stuff. But it was interesting to watch it be so prevalent in EMEA and the APAC regions, but not necessarily, quote unquote, hit the U.S. as dramatically as. Is that just time as well? Of
it, I mean, it can be a mix of a ton of things. I mean, if this hit the U.K. And a bunch of Europe at scale well before anybody in the U.S. was waking up. And so for worms to work effectively, obviously there's probably an exponential response based on the number of vulnerable assets on a network, based on somebody opening an email and clicking on it. So I'm sure there is some, there's got to have some, it has to do something with the maturity of the patch management programs here, with the time difference, the awareness, so people could start taking mitigative actions before people were coming into the office. I'm sure there's a slew of things that that contributed it to not being as impactful here. There might have been things that the authors didn't specifically were targeting, right? So it is all speculation at this point. It will be very interested. Hopefully there's increasing clarity around why that happened.
Yeah, and it will be interesting to maybe have you and maybe some other folks back on as we get more of this information. The last question I have is, it's a bit of a loaded one because I think people don't struggle with this, but I think it's a tough one in general. But this whole concept of ransomware, from a both personal perspective, so, you know, whether it hits you and you lose all the photos of your kids, or it starts rampaging its way through your work environment and operationally challenging you, as you pointed out earlier, what do you do when it happens to you?
Well,
you hope you backed up, you hope all that stuff happened, but,
you know, well, first is, like, you don't want to trivialize it. It wasn't just those scenarios. It was also you're in the back of an ambulance and your ambulance is being diverted to a different hospital.
Right?
So, you know, not a big fan of FUD. Also not a big fan of people playing down the impact that this had and could have had. Because it did. It impacted the medical care of people. And that's a major problem. And so, I think that, you know, it was interesting. We were having a conversation earlier, and I'll answer that this way, where I was basically giving the advice to say, hey, if you've lost something critical, right, and it's not backed up, like, you have a personal decision to make about whether you want to pay this ransom or not.
Yeah.
And that is a personal one. Now, there's a lot of people and agencies and organizations advising against it
because
they don't want to encourage this type of behavior.
Yeah.
Right? It's the don't negotiate with terrorists concept.
Yeah.
And you know, but it's easy to provide that guidance when it's not the, you know, the video of your firstborn being delivered that's about to get lost. So, you know, I think
or years of work or like whatever it is that is personally important to you.
Or your business. And so I think the most important lesson to take away is backing stuff up is so trivial and inexpensive at this point. Like, spend the hour to figure out how to do it.
Yeah.
Right? So you're not in a position where you have to pay the ransom. I think that is – but, it, you know, I don't know that if I could give people advice not to. I think if you've lost data that that is important to you, you have to make that decision for yourself.
No, I went through this with a family member who – had ransomware on her computer, and it was her PC. Her Mac was fine for the business and all that stuff, but her PC, where all of her children's photos were, and for her, that, like, how can I tell her not to do that? Right? I'm like, that's up to you.
Yeah.
I can't guarantee you're actually going to get this stuff back. That's a whole nother conversation, but you kind of have to make that decision on your own. And I think that's why this stuff is so tricky. Sometimes it's certainly not black and white.
Yeah.
All right. So we're gonna keep watching this. We'll pull you in as much as we can.
It's great. I love getting pulled in.
I mean, we need
Maybe we should just have like Indian food here ready.
I mean, I will say next Security Nation podcast, there may be a requisite.
I know. I feel bad. This is
really let me down, Kyle.
I know. I understand. But you know who we didn't let down? The listeners. Because you provide a good input, and I'm dead serious about that.
It's the salad.
It's not as good as Indian. Awesome. Josh, thank you so much. And we will keep people informed of this as we move forward.
Great. Thank you.